Listen to this.
Zakamani, the flying winger.
Here's Brad Evans.
It's Steve.
Who is it? It's Brad Evans.
Is that again?
Happy days are here again. Turning with a drive, it's Steve Zakamani. Evans with the left foot. He's an attacking threat, Brad Evans.
This is so weird.
The party has started.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome, Winging It with Zach and Brad. Big game coming up for the Sounders. Massive game, the type of game that essentially you wait the whole year for. Sounders against LAFC, and especially in this year that we've had. You know, it's going to be obviously not the same without the fans in there making that playoff noise, but you're going to watch two quality teams. We'll see exactly what kind of lineups they can put out there. We'll see what happens with the international window, some players coming back, maybe after quarantine, maybe not. We'll see what happens. But regardless, these two teams have played each other so many times. And then that historic Sounders win from last year at this stage. Well, not this stage, the next stage of the playoffs. But it still looms large. So we'll touch on that a little bit. We'll talk about some end-of-year stuff, some awards, kind of what I think, what Brad thinks. And then some exciting announcement for the Sounders. New addition to the Sounders ownership group. One of the biggest, not just Seattle sports icons, but one of the greatest sporting icons in all of American sports history. So we'll touch on that as well. But it's only really, I think, one place to start. That's LAFC. When the draw came through and we saw it, I think everybody got excited. For me personally, since then, my excitement's waned a little bit, if I'm honest, just because I just don't know if both teams will be able to put out their very best 11s, which is what I want to see at this stage. I just want to see them go at it. I think we deserve it for all that 2020 has brought to us, but still think it'll be a great game. I've personally said, I think the Sounders are the better team. I think the Sounders are favorites, but you can't write this LAFC team off. So I'll kind of maybe give a few of my thoughts on it, but Brad, I'm really curious. Just what you see from the matchup. You know, we've seen them a bunch of times, but it's the playoffs. It's a one-off game. Does home field advantage count? Does it not? How fit is Carlos Vela? Does it matter if Rossi's in or not? I don't know. I'm kind of curious how you see this.
Yeah, I think, you know, initially when we spoke about it on air after the game, we found out, you know, that night on decision day that we'll be playing LAFC. I think it's exciting. I think you're going to have to play this team one way or another. And I actually think that the Sounders roster is deeper. So if it ends up being a situation where there's a couple guys from Sounders out, a couple guys from LAFC, I think being at home, I think that the Sounders still have the advantage. And that's something that maybe that's just a feeling I have. You know, we've talked about the rosters up and down, left and right all season long. And now that we're at the nitty gritty one-off game, it's I think the Sounders still have the advantage here. But in saying that, it's still a really good LAFC team. I also like that it's from here on out, it's only one game. It's do or die from here on out, and the Sounders have been very good in those games. They close the season well against San Jose. You know, your big players got on the scoreboard, assist with each other. So you get that fire back, and you're starting to feel that, like, excitement of the close of the season. And I think you're still yet to see the best from a couple guys, and we hope that they can turn it on for this game. But I think it's a great question. Vela, no. Is he 1,000%? I don't know. Not yet. It doesn't matter if he's at 50% or 100%. He's still better than, you know, 99% of this league at 50%. So yeah. He is the danger man. You have to neutralize and do the best you can against him. I still don't think LAFC's defense is that good. Yeah. I don't think they're any better than San Jose's defense, to be honest. And that's the way that the Sounders have. You have to approach it with respect, but also know that our front four versus their back four should be a no-brainer for me going up against that back four.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. How should the Sounders play? Because last year's win, it kind of was a non-Sounders performance in a sense, because you know Schmetz and the crew, they want to keep the ball, they want to make the build up, they want to have, you know, 55% possession at least if they can. And all of a sudden they go to LAFC last year and they flip that on its head. They defend. They have Jordan Morris tracking back on Carlos Vela very faithfully the whole game. They have maybe have five shots, you know, from three or four attacks and score three goals. It was a very different script. Can you play that way at home? you need to play that way against an LAFC team that will be missing a few players maybe and hasn't had a great year and whose defense is way worse than it was last year. Just from a tactical standpoint as well, what would even be the best way to approach this? You try to go toe-to-toe and just dominate them and come out from the off, or sit back and counter? Because, I mean, defensively, I think that's where the separation is. I think both teams' attacks, very, very good. People forget that even in a down year for LAFC, they still led the league in scoring without Carlos Vela for most of the year. So this is a team that creates so many chances no matter who's playing. And even with a somewhat weakened team, they did beat the Sounders 3-1 down in LA. So these teams both get each other. But with that back line, they haven't really settled in a goalkeeper this year. They don't have, sort of the experience from last year, Betasor, Harvey, Zimmerman. It's a very different back line. It could be a couple of pieces missing from that as well. I wonder if we don't even think about trying to counter them and just really going at them from the off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, I think, in the San Jose game, the first half, I said it. It's, you can't, in a one-off game, you can't always get the ball back with the center backs. João Paulo drops deep. He gets the ball. He plays it to one guy, and then he plays it to the next. It can't be pattern play throughout the whole game. Soccer is a transition sport, and things happen when turnovers are made. So if I was playing in this game, looking at home, we're in a one-off game, the intensity is going to be incredibly high. Instead of Raul playing the ball back to Nico, Nico goes, back to, Gustav, whoever's back there, João Paulo. Then it goes back to center back, and then we start playing. I'm going right at him from the beginning. I'm saying, hey, Nico, drop behind the line. Jordan, get your ass on the touchline and sprint forward, and I'm going to launch a ball forward and put this team under the gun. Why would I want the ball closer to Carlos Vela in that front three when I could have it in the opponent's half for the majority of the game in front of the weakest part of their team? I think that's got to be the tactic and the approach to this game. Now, you can sprinkle in your good play because the Sounders are a good team. They find success sometimes when, they put the ball down and really play methodically. But if I'm playing up against a weak defense, I want that ball in front of the weakest person on that back line as much as possible. Whether that's a right back, a left back, a center back, the Sounders staff have to decide that. And so do the players on the team. They got to pinpoint, if a person makes a mistake in the first 5 minutes of the game, you have to go at that guy as many times as possible and put him under pressure, make him kick the ball out of bounds. Because San Jose game, ball gets played out of bounds, a throw in or a quick free kick, that can change the course of a game. And the Sounders have to realize that in this one, that transition will be key. Keep it away from the front three and get after these guys. Does that make sense? As a left winger, you're playing in a playoff game against LAFC or LA Galaxy back in the day when they were really good. You wanted to see the ball as much as possible and get after their right back, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've always said, for me personally, if I was still playing now and even back then, I preferred this draw because you heard we spoke to Ante Razov and we'll play his interview shortly here in the next segment, but he said, we're going to play the way we play. We're going to go at it. We're going to go for them. This team's not going to come in and sit back. So I think as an attacking player, I would love to play against LAFC because they're going to take chances. They're going to commit numbers forward. They respect you, but they always think they're better regardless. And so, yeah, I mean, their right back's been a bit of a revolving door. Is it Latif Blessing? Is it Blackman? Whoever it's been, honestly, I don't think is going to be able to match up with Jordan if he's at his best. So I would agree with that. I think the Sounders have to go for it. If I was thinking back then, the Galaxy, they had AJ De La Garza right back, sometimes Sean Franklin. I love those games because Beckham wasn't tracking back. Landon wasn't really tracking back. I mean, they wanted to score four and were okay if you scored three. So I prefer those games way more. I'm going to say, for me, I actually think, and I don't want to jinx it, but I actually think if the Sounders score first, I think it's game over. I really, really do, because I've watched a lot of LAFC defensively, and even in games we've had up here. And once they concede, I mean, they just start going for it even more. And I think if Rossi and Rodriguez don't play, if they don't, then that's for sure, because those two actually work both ways a lot more than it would be Carlos Vela and BWP, Bradley Wright Phillips, who they'll be carrying two passengers defensively. They'll be carrying two passengers. Those guys don't cover the ground. And I think it's a Sounders score first. LAFC is trying to attack, and those two aren't getting back in transition. I think it could get ugly. That's my hope. But with Carlos Vela, which I'm glad he's playing because I want to see the best players play. He can win you a game on his own. And even with that said, it would still have to be 3-2 or something because they're not going to score first and then sharp shop and sit back. They can't do that. They want to play. They believe, Bob Bradley believes he has the best team and he believes he's the best coach. He wants to revenge against Schmetz from last year. So I put it sound his favorites for that. I'll ask you this. I mean, I think it does, but I don't know if it really does. Do you think from Bob to Ante to the players, are they thinking revenge from last year? Or is that a case of that happened and we'll approach this game for what it is?
I think so. I think if I'm a manager, I think you touch on it. You don't dwell on it. I think they probably talked about it more when the Sounders faced LAFC early in the season about, hey, let's have a good performance today. Last year when we played this team, it left a sour taste in our mouth. But this season's been strange. I think he'll touch on it. He'll say, hey, last year at this time, the Sounders came to our place. They played a good game. They beat us on our turf. Now we're going up to the Sounders, and we've got to take the game to them and impose. And if they can do that, they might find success. So knowing Bob, knowing Ante, like, you know, Ante would always say it's, you know, it's man versus man on the field, ultimately. And it's whoever shows up on that day. So that will be more of the message versus then, hey, this is a revenge game. You know, they'll cue it up like that and there'll be some talk around it. But it's a really different LAFC team. Almost half the team is different.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of a different feel. And a lot of those guys that are playing in this game may not have been there last year. So it's hard to talk a revenge game when it's not the same 11. A lot of the same Sounders remain from last year. So not too much of a revenge game. If you're a coach, if you're a player, do you see it that way?
As a player, no, because I think for me as a player, you know, you're going to win some games, you're going to lose some games. I was able to lose a game and then file it away or win a game and file it away. I didn't really dwell on it. There was no like individual duels I had, like where I'm like, you know, I've got to get this guy got me last time. I have to get him. I kind of just took each game for what it was. I do think there are some teams that, you know, you go through in your career who somehow seem to always just beat you no matter what you do. And that can become something that's a bit of a target, but these two teams beat each other. There's been games where I thought, okay, Seattle's definitely the heavy favorite and then LAFC wins. Okay, LAFC today, they're going to be too strong and then Seattle wins. And for a long time, it was 4-0 one way, 3-0 the other way, 3-1. It was always never close. One team always smashed the other team. So I, with this particular fixture, I wouldn't view it that way. I think it is a rivalry. I think it is just from being, but from being a good football rivalry, being two quality teams. So I don't know that the revenge thing is going to factor for the Sounders, for LAFC. I don't think the players in the Sounders locker room or Brian Schmetz are going to approach it that way, but they'll be aware that it could be a motivating tool that Bob uses. But as you mentioned, a lot of that team from last year from LAFC is gone anyway. And some of the guys who did play last year may not play this year. We'll wait and see. Sounders LAFC Tuesday night, November 24th, I believe. Make sure you tune in for that one. We'll be back. We'll be talking to a former Sounders assistant coach. He's now LAFC assistant coach, one of the few players in MLS history to score 100 goals. I think he has like 114, 115 goals in his career. He was a fantastic player, has a bright future as a coach. Ante Razov will be joining us to take us behind enemy lines and talk all things LA. And then once we get back after that, we'll discuss some end of season awards. There's some announcements coming through. We'll kind of get our thoughts on what that is. And we'll discuss Ken Griffey Jr. joining the Sounders ownership team. Stay tuned.
All right, everybody. Super excited to have this next guest. I'm actually surprised he hasn't been on before. Former Sounders FC assistant coach, current LAFC. I would call him the brain behind LAFC. Mr. Ante Razov, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, let's just get straight into this. We don't want to take too much of your time. Obviously, your role here in Seattle, you know, from what I remember, you know, was really building a structure from front to back in that flow of play, the movement of the ball, a ton of pattern play. Is your role with LAFC the same or has it progressed into something bigger? And the second part of that question is, what's it like working with those front three and four, especially in one-on-one sessions?
I mean, I think everything evolves in football. And so the way the way we train, the way the ideas here are certainly a little bit different from Seattle. Those were my early days in coaching, patterning and movement, ideas of how to get the best out of Clint Noba. Certainly is one way of doing it. The way it works here, we don't really do much patterning at all. It's a daily work on the front to back movement of the team in general. Certainly I have more of a task working with the front group, which is super fun and awesome when you have weapons like that to work on a daily basis. And guys really open to different ideas and concepts that maybe that they were used to.
Ante, great to have you on. I'm a big fan of your work and your football mind. And I know we have a big game to look forward to, but I want to look back for just a second because I've been on record saying that the LAFC team from last season, for me, is by far the best MLS team I've seen in terms of the way you played the game, some of the innovations that you and Bob and Kenny had on the pitch there. Obviously, Carlos had an incredible year. Just the way you guys won. You scored the most goals. You hardly conceded. You did so many things well. Just kind of talk us through what it was like to actually be on the bench for that season. What was it like being a part of the best regular MLS season we've ever seen any team put together?
You know, when the season started, you never really know. Certainly coming out of training camp, there was a growing confidence of from the first year now, adding more pieces, the players that are returning, understanding more and more, taking on more of the initiative, certainly tweaking to what we did the first year. And then it just kind of started rolling. And then, you know, there were some moments where something we tried within training that kind of took a turn in a little bit of a different way. Without getting too specific. And then it was kind of like, wow, this is really something different from what my experiences were in MLS with different teams as a player and as a coach. And yeah, made a lot of games less stressful to sit back because me personally, I was very, very confident once I saw what was happening that we could probably win almost every game, and that's not being arrogant. I'm thinking we could score 4 or 5 goals every game.
It's crazy. That was a crazy year. You know, I remember us sitting in the sauna every day after training and just talking about soccer and, you know, what the Sounders needed to do in your mind to get to the next level, you know, and button heads with Ziggy all the time. I think, you know, me personally, I was always button heads with him too. But now you moved on and you're with Bob. It's been a couple years since Seattle. You've gotten, you know, obviously experience under Bob before as a player. Is head coach job on your mind anytime in the near future? Is that something that you've been mulling around, or is there still a lot to learn for you being an assistant and especially, you know, underneath Bob as well?
I think, you know, let's go back a little bit, you know, with Ziggy, you know, those were interesting times. Ziggy brought me in and, you know, we all, God bless Ziggy, wonderful man. Football changes fast. And the way I saw it was there was a sleeping giant up there that needed to be woken up. And so my ideas of football and playing in a fast positional way, progressive on the edge, I just kind of poked him with those kind of things. So those were my kind of messages to him. And every head coach has to decide for himself what he wants to do with regards to that. Certainly, yeah, I have a motivation of becoming a head coach. I think learning, I think anyone that stops learning, whether they're a head coach or an assistant coach, that becomes dangerous territory. Football doesn't wait for anyone, and it's constantly evolving and tweaking. And if you just look at the best teams, let's talk about Champions League winners. You went from the age of Barcelona, and then, you know, Man City came around with that. But then Liverpool now changed some things. And then guess what? Bayern reinvented itself. And they're all just little tweaks that that push the game in a never-ending way. And so that's the way I kind of look at it. If you kind of just set yourself in a way and that's it, before the turn comes up, you're already way behind.
Yeah, Ange, I completely agree with you. And I remember having a few convos with you in the time you were up here. Not many, but a couple of times trying to pick your brain about some of your ideas. With that in mind, I do want to talk about this year because it's been challenging for every team. Obviously, we're in a pandemic and a lot's happened. It's been a stop-start regular season. But for you guys in particular as well, because your season started very early with the Champions League. And then, you know, at some point during the year, you lost the best player in the league, you know, the best player in the country. He goes down. And then all of a sudden, this team that had the best defensive record was leaking so many goals. And you know, we couldn't decide who the goalkeeper was. And so many things happened. So from the inside, how challenging has 2020 been just for you guys trying to figure out maybe not a way to get back to where you were, but a way to at least play a bit closer to your potential, or have the injuries and some of the things just been too much to overcome?
Listen, if anyone has the playbook with how to deal with 2020, I'm waiting for it. I don't think anyone can be prepared. Listen, the last game coming out before COVID hit was when we came to a stop. We were playing Cruz Azul that night in the Champions League, and we felt very good about where we were coming off that León 3-0 win at home, where it was, for me, it was one of the best performances of an MLS team I've seen, down 2-0 against top team in Mexico. And then obviously everything kind of comes crashing down. Listen, it's a challenge every day. You have players from different countries, continents, some who are alone, super young, trying to keep them engaged, keep them excited about coming to practice every day. These are massive challenges. Going to the bubble, Carlos not being in the bubble. I didn't go to the bubble due to my wife's pregnancy as well. The stress that comes along with everything that is 2020, it's been a real challenge. And now, in the end here, look at, we've come to a playoff game. We've lost three or four internationals to COVID. Not sure about the fourth. Like, what do? You can only say, tell the group, guys, come the 24th. They're going to have 11 guys on the field. So are we. There's going to be a ball. There's going to be a referee. It's all there for us to go for. Mm. That's the only way you can message this, because I can come up, Bob can come up with a million things of like that's gone to hell. But in the end, on the 24th, we're going to put the ball down. We're going to play against a very good team. And like we always do, we're going to go for it. And the way we try to go for it in games against a really good opponent who we've had really good games with.
Talk about Vela a little bit. He gets a lot of attention, but to hear from you firsthand as, like, you know, the guy who works with strikers, you've worked with Clint, you've worked with Oba, you know, you've seen yourself also in the league as a left footer, especially have success. Compare him to, you know, the guys that you trained here, and really tell us why he is so special and what separates him. And he's just on a different planet. How?
Listen, I played with Risto Stoichkov, obviously. I played with Yuri Djorkaeff. Peter Novak, obviously worked with Clint. Carlos is the most talented one. And it's close with Stoichkov because he was older by the time, but like the things Carlos can do and the way he does them for me is, yes, he's in a different class. Carlos every day has a smile. He's the most happy guy that you can possibly, there's never bad days with Carlos. He's open to being challenged and pushed, and I give it to him good on days, because sometimes, you know, Carlos is in a too happy of a place, but he's very open to ideas and being pushed and challenged. But he's on a different playing field. This guy can do things. I like to think that I taught him how to curl that shot in with his left foot. We call it a free throw here. It's literally a free throw for him. But yeah, no, that's a God-given innate thing that we've tried to accentuate and help him perfect. But he's just a great guy all around, and he's been great for our club. He's a superstar, but you know, he's like an average Joe downstairs in the locker room. He's not in any way, shape, form different from the rest of the group.
Ante, last one from me here. I want to talk about you a little bit. You're one of the few guys in the 100 goal club in MLS. You know, you played for a few teams. Obviously, I think people remember your years at Chicago Fire, but also a ton of goals for Chivas USA. In what ways has the league changed? I know we all say it's changed a lot. I mean, I played towards the end of yours, I think, and then a few years after, and then I think it's changed even from when I played. How do you think the league has changed? And then in a very honest way, how do you think you as a forward would have adapted your game in today's game? How would you see yourself faring in the 2020 version of MLS?
The way the league has changed, it's much more professional. I think the coaching is better. I think the infrastructure is better. I think we're getting better players, young talent from outside. We'd like to see a lot more younger talent that are domestic, but we understand that guys have goals and dreams to play in Europe. The way the league has come in leaps and bounds with the new stadiums, the quality of the pitches, the quality of the training facilities, it's night and day. It's a million miles away. I tell these guys, man, some days we didn't even have matching uniforms for training, you know, and they have perfect pitches, perfect gyms, everything's there for them. So I think all of this has helped with the league starting to really, really get better and better. And I think once we get past this pandemic and things can begin to stabilize, you're going to see that this thing really start to skyrocket. I'm really a big believer that things are going to take off in MLS. As for me personally, I think my game was more suited towards now, the ball on the ground, tactical movements of, having a coach, work with the strikers daily. We didn't have any of that, really. If I played with Carlos Vela, I'd be a DP too.
We all would. We all would, man. But usually we want to like recap or ask, the guests about what should we expect from this team. But we've played too many times this year. The fans know what to expect from LAFC. We've seen it so many times. My biggest question, and we talked about it in the locker room and, hanging out with each other. I always want to know, and especially your opinion now being with that quality team, the Sounders and now with LAFC, what's it going to take for an MLS team to win Champions League? Is it budget still? Is it scheduling? Is it a roster, top to bottom? What is it that will get that, and when will it come?
Listen, the one funny joke we had in Seattle is when we were playing Club America and we led two times in Azteca. Yeah. And then they made a substitute and brought on Benedetto, and we put on our buddy Kovar. And you kind of go, and we love Aaron Kovar, but there's a $25 million player coming in as a sub. Listen, I think we're closer than ever. I'd like to think that had we had a normal chance this year, and our road would have been the most impossible road to play León, Cruz Azul, and then Club America, which I think probably maybe might get by Atlanta up 3-0. And then play in the final. We all had this dream that we wrote this destiny of going through the top three Mexican teams and winning this thing. But I don't think the MLS team is that far off. Yes, you can always have improvement with the salary cap budgets, having better quality rosters. It's moving in that direction. Obviously, I think there'll be hopefully there won't be too much carnage from everything of the pandemic with regards to the financial stability of everything. I think we're all in good shape with that. But I don't think it's far away, guys. I really don't.
Love it. Thanks, Ante. Yep. Appreciate you, man.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me, man.
Ante, you're the man, man. Thanks for coming
out. I missed the days in the sauna.
I know. Those were the days, bro. Those were the days.
I need a good sweat for sure. I've got my dad thought going on.
All right, welcome back. Thanks again, Ante Razov. We'll be figuratively seeing him on Tuesday when he comes to town with LAFC. Again, a reminder, Sounders LAFC, first round of the 2020 playoffs will be taking place this coming Tuesday, November 24th. It's award season time there's going to be a lot of announcements coming. Some have already been made. Goalkeeper of the Year, Andre Blake from Philadelphia. Young Player of the Year went to Diego Rossi. Golden Boot, obviously, was Diego Rossi. He won that. Defender of the Year was Walker Zimmerman. And I think that may be the only ones out so far. And there'll be more coming. Obviously, MVP is a big one. They may have announced Newcomer of the Year as Lucas Zelarayán from Columbus. I need to double check that one. So some big ones. Did you care about awards as a player? Because I think people don't know that not every player. For some players, it's in the contract. It's in the contract where if you make, well, obviously all-star team, but more importantly, I think best 11 or you win, you know, certain award, you'll get a crazy bonus. So I think maybe it matters to those players more. I never really thought about it as a player, but is that something that crossed your mind much? And do you have any thoughts on the awards, like for MVP, who should get? Do you agree with Zimmerman? Kind of your thoughts on that whole situation?
Yeah, I think, you know, in the beginning of the year, you go into preseason and, you know, you're really team focused. You're saying, you know, what are our goals as a team and how can we accomplish them? And you're really just hoping to make it through preseason alive and healthy and really trying to get into your form. You know, the first, you know, 8 to 10 games of the season are getting your feet underneath you, getting a good rhythm of play with the guys around you. You know, you might have some new players coming into the team while still focusing on yourself. And then you kind of get into the summer months and, you know, if you're not getting called up with the national team, you know, you're playing pretty much every single game then for your club. And you start to get a taste of, could this be a season where, you know, I excel? Is the writing on the wall for me to say, hey, I might score 10 or 15 goals this year. Or, you know, I might be part of a defense that has, you know, like Zimmerman, you know, 15 clearances and, you know, a ton of shutouts and just sacrificing the body. The more shutouts my goalkeeper has, usually the better the center backs are doing in front of them. So you kind of start towards the summer months, get an idea of if those are possible. And then you start to check your contract and you say, oh, okay, interesting. I got this little bonus. I'm doing well this year. Which one of these could I hit if I keep this up? So I think it's in the back of guys' minds as kind of the summer months roll along. You know, those bonuses aren't put in by the player. Those are oftentimes, you know, the agent negotiating and trying to fit, you know, a player into a salary cap at a smaller budget. And then, you know, those bonuses get paid out. So, I would say, well, it was never in the back of my mind. I knew I was never going to be, you know, in a best 11 because I was never a good attacking player and I wasn't the best defender. And especially statistically, you know, you look at, you know, a right winger, you know, Johnny Russell, being around him and training with him every day in sporting, like the stuff he does in games is what he does in training. He's that explosive. Yeah. He's that good in training where you just look and he's just a different class. Right. It's not even a question. And you look at, you know, your ratings, I think are, you know, pretty spot on for, you know, at least the top three in each position. So,
right.
I think you get an idea for that. And I don't argue with any of these. I think everyone's going to have their own opinions, but yeah, it becomes obvious when you start asking players to give their best 11, not just the guys who were, you know, media and coaches and GMs. I like the players voting on the best 11 because they tend to have the best sense of what was going on that year. And in games, they often see things that, you know, the media don't, and, you know, coaches and GMs don't see why they make that player so good.
Right.
You know, looking at left backs, I still think, why is it that left back is always like the weakest? Seems to be like the, except for Jovan, I can't remember another left back that really stuck out to me during a season. Like none of these guys would really play in Europe and start, but they're, you know, serviceable in MLS. Like how Hollingshead is so good at left back is crazy in a good league, right? Yeah. He's not really a left back, you know, going up and down that list. So, right. Yeah, I don't know. It's a tough one. But you on the other hand, I mean, you had, you know, you were, you know, 10 goals or 10 assists or whatever, and you start to think about, hey, I might hit a bonus here. I might be best 11. I need to push this and you get that.
Yeah, I think for me, it would have maybe become more prominent had like, the trajectory been able to continue. I think I would have been in those conversations. I mean, I think I was, but I think more of a year in, year out sort of like, yeah, he belongs there. I think so. I think that would have maybe, I didn't think about it much at the time. I think if things had gone that way, maybe I'd have thought about it more. One award I was surprised with, for me, I know I love Philadelphia. I love Jim Curtin. Love their team, honestly. I love the kid, Aronson. I mean, he's fantastic to watch. I was surprised that he won Coach of the Year, because I thought Oscar Pereja from Orlando, the turnaround, they were really bad. Never made the playoffs, and he made them really exciting to watch. But another thing there was Schmetzer didn't make the top seven for Coach of the Year. And again, it was the Sounders once again second place. I think they've come second in the Western Conference regular season every year with Brian Schmetzer. That's consistency. Is he still overlooked in your opinion, or were the Sounders maybe not that spectacular this year?
He's always overlooked, and it's the Zach Scott curse, you know. Scott played for the team for so long. He built a family here, and it was a case of, oh, we know he's going to stay here. He's not going anywhere, right? So he never got the credit that he deserved. If Zach would have been in his, you know, that year that, you know, he helped Chad win Defender of the Year and he was his center back partner, if he would have caused a stink and been like, hey, you need to pay me, you know, half of what Chad's making or else I'm out of here, then I think it would have been different. Zach would have had this, you know, a little bit of a swagger about him, you know, but the fact of the matter was, oh yeah, I'm cool here, you know. Obviously he was angry about it, but it's really tough to uproot three kids and go into an unknown situation where you've been somewhere for 10 or 15 years. And I think Schmetz gets overlooked because, yeah, he was here with the MLS team before, and this team has done so good every single year, you know, with Ziggy and then now with Schmetz. It's almost a given here. And when, you know, we did the Alliance meeting last night, and Garth and Schmetz were talking. And you know what? Sometimes it sounds like a broken record with this club, because the team just wins so much. And I think people think, oh, we'll just plug in a coach here and he'll do just as good because this team is so good. But that's not really the case. And you've seen that around the league, that just because a team is good and you bring in another coach, look at Atlanta. Atlanta had a good team and they brought in, what, 2-3 coaches now, and they haven't been able to figure it out. So I think Schmetz's performance often goes underlooked. Consistency in this league doesn't get the credit that it should. Because we often, how many times do we harp on the bad teams? Always Cincinnati, terrible, can't figure it out, right? Multiple teams are just bad all the time. Houston, they just cannot figure it out. And that's what's in the news, not the fact that, you know, consistently this team and under Schmetz, his record at home is insane. You cannot argue with that. To not be up there is pretty crazy. And I'm sure that Schmetz is pissed about that. It's pretty crazy. He just does not get, like, the fact that Gary Smith is up there blows my mind, because that coach is terrible. I'm telling you, I've talked to guys on Nashville, guys that were there, you know, guys that are, you know, around the league, guys that had him in Colorado. He is not a good coach.
Right.
And the fact that he's up there is that blows my mind. Peter, I always give credit to Peter. You know, Caleb, what he's done. Giovanni, yeah. Greg, yeah. Oscar, I think, is probably the biggest one, because you always look at turnarounds, like comeback player of the year. It's like comeback team. And Jim has been building that team for, what, 5, 6, 7 years now?
Yeah.
Great. So, game. You know, he did good this year. You win a supporter shield. Credit where credit's due. But
Something that you probably are maybe even better positioned than me, before we touch on the Griffey Jr. stuff, I got into it with a lot of people on Twitter last night. I had a bit of time. But, you know, Merritt Paulson, frenemy of the Sounders, Portland Timbers owner. And I've come to know Merritt. You know, I communicate with Merritt here and there. And I had put my top five D-mids out. And I said, hey, you know, I'm not going to put Ozzie in the top five. Just, you know, too many injuries, a little bit older. But when it comes to best ever, for me, he's there. I think he pips Shari and he picks Carl Beckham and then he pips Diego Chara and probably a few before. And then Merritt came back and said, no, he thinks, you know, Chara is the best. And Jim Curtin, Philadelphia coach, had said Chara is the best ever. And then I had a bunch of Portland fans in my mentions. And it was kind of this debate that for them, it's common knowledge that Diego Chara is better than Ozzie. Whereas for me, I've always felt people respect the both of them. But I've always felt the league-wide consensus was that Ozzie was the better player. And I've played with both. And I have my reasons for thinking why Ozzie's better. And Chara is fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. But I felt I was shocked because there was a lot of people that actually really believed that Chara was the better player than Ozzie. You played next to Ozzie. I think, honestly, the more I think about this, I think his best years were 2009 to 2014. That's for me. I think he was still good towards the end. Those early years, he was
not even close.
Else.
Yeah,
something else. And I'm just curious where you kind of, and it, take nothing away from Chara. Chara, he's still doing it. At this moment in time, he probably is the better of the two because he's durable, he's still playing, and Ozzie's sort of on the way down. But from a all-time stake, and it's very hard to prove this best ever stuff, it's just opinions, but as someone who spent, you know, a lot of your years alongside Ozzie in a 4-4-2, how good was he, and would you place him above Chara?
Yeah, I would. I always think about who I would rather play against. And it's simple for me. I would much rather play against Chara than Ozzie, especially both even in their prime. Ozzie would literally try and kill you on the field. Like he would try to kill you in practice. And that's what made him so special. And if you ask, when I went to Kansas City, it was never a question if Ozzie wasn't the best D-mid in the league. Like even Ilya Sanchez, you know, was a new player in the league, but he had watched MLS. He knew about Ozzie, and that's a good player. And they would talk about him. Nobody around – I mean, I don't know. When I was with the Sounders, we never even talked about Chara. Like, it wasn't a guy that was even circled on the starting 11 that was like, oh, you got to watch out for this guy or keep the ball away from him. Yeah. It wasn't even a question for me. And even when we played Portland, there were other guys that were always circled on that. But when you played against Seattle – you had to keep the ball away from Ozzie. That was one of the guys that was circled on the roster where you were like, hey, you got to keep it out of that area. Otherwise, he's going to punish you. And I still think even Kyle Beckerman is better than Chara for me. If you're talking, you know, even longevity and, what he's able to do with a club that didn't have the pockets of, you know, Portland, didn't have, you know, it was just built differently. But we're talking different times also.
True.
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter, and you know, obviously, I guess I'm biased also because I got to play with Ozzie for so long and didn't play with Chara. I mean, you've played with Chara. You know, maybe you actually have the better opinion than anybody.
Chara is fantastic, and it wasn't until I got on the pitch with him where I said, okay, this guy's brilliant. Same with Valeri. You know, I got on very well with Valeri down there. And those were two that once I got on the pitch, I was like, oh, wow, these guys are really good. The only difference I've always felt with Chara and Ozzie was they both cover ground. They both make crazy interceptions. They both win a lot of balls. They do that. Once they got the ball, that's for me the difference. Chara was a simple five-yard pass, and his job was done. Ozzie would dribble 50 yards past people. Ozzie would turn out of tight spaces. When you think, how did he see that the guy's behind him? Ozzie could ping a 50-yard pass as a free ball. Ozzie had more once he got the ball. He wasn't just a holding mid. Ozzie was like a full-on footballer where he could be the best on the ball on any given day. He could be the fastest guy on the pitch. So I think that was always a separation for me. And Chara's added to his game as he's got older. But yeah, I thought it was interesting. You know, I know Merritt's going to defend his player who served him very well and made him successful. But I was surprised. I didn't think it was that close. I thought Ozzie was sort of the between those two, widely regarded as the better of the two. And at this moment in time, maybe Chara. Ozzie's on the way down. But all time, I'd say Ozzie. Before we go, so I spoke to, I had a chance to speak to Ken Griffey Jr. last week. He's obviously joined the Sounders ownership group. The news is out there. I'll be honest. I only heard of him late because I was in London. And then when LeBron had said that he was his favorite athlete, and I actually got to ask Ken Griffey Jr. about, I don't know, you didn't grow up in Seattle. So was he, how big of a deal was he? When did you become familiar with him? And what do you think this means for the club that you've added such an icon to the ownership group?
Yeah, for me, it's just like really cool and it's nostalgic. And, you know, I don't know, you guys obviously didn't do this back in England, but in the 90s, all I did was collect playing cards. Like that's what I got as gifts for Christmas, for holidays, for, you know, even Easter, any holiday, somebody would slip, you know, a pack of cards and I would go down to the card shop and I would go to card trade shows. And I was like obsessed with sports and cards and collecting these sports cards. And then you get into these little magazines that like tells you how rare the cards are. And you're like, oh, if I get a rookie card, it's really rare, right? And then there were special off editions of certain cards. And then you start to learn about these players that were massive at the time. You know, he was every single person, even if I grew up in Arizona, knew about, you know, Ken Griffey and the swing and the kid. And, you know, he was just a super icon at the time. And I remember collecting his cards. Like, that was one of my main favorite cards. Like, if I saw Ken Griffey, I was like, whoa, that's gold, man. You know, yeah. It's so cool. So thinking back on it, it was awesome. And I'm stoked to, like, be a 35-year-old guy and try to get a card autographed. Like, that's totally what I'm going to do. Because that's how cool it is to me. You know, it's just, it's really neat. I don't like really fangirl off anything, but this one is really cool for me just because he was so good. You know, and his dad played in Major League Baseball too. Like, how cool is that? It's like a family affair. And, I mean, no question, one of the greatest all time. And to do it here in Seattle was just iconic and so cool.
One thing you said, which I was really shocked about, I don't know if you've been there, I asked him, I guess it was like a quick fire round, so I don't know how much time he had to think, although he answered pretty quickly, was what his favorite restaurant in Seattle is, and he said 13 coins. And I can only, really? I mean, I'm like, as your favorite, but I'm assuming late night, after a game, maybe he stops by, I don't know. That's what I'd assume, because it's downtown, I guess, but that was a big surprise for me.
Where did you and Oba always go after games?
Barolo, Italian restaurant.
Barolo, that's
I shouldn't have said that out loud, because I still go there. But but I would assume Griffey would ask. I thought he was going to say like Candlis or something, Morton Steakhouse. He said 13 coins. I said great. So, but he was excited. He's excited to join. I think it's great that the Sounders continue to add some of these families and icons. His wife is a massive, massive. Soccer fan. She actually got him into the game. I know he's said a couple of stories, you know, living in a downtown apartment in 2009 and hearing the fans roar and thinking it was from his TV, and then had to open the window and hear the fans and being excited about it, then coming to games, trying to figure out what was happening, doing scarves up at MLS Cup. So massive get for the Sounders. I think it's huge. Before we go, obviously not predictions in terms of scoreline, but how do you see the game going on Tuesday?
I'm so bad at these, Steve. Every time we talk, I try to do these, and I always like botch it and get it wrong. It's a great question. I hope that the Sounders come out and impose their game early on and don't just sit back and knock the ball around and try to feel out what LAFC is going to do. If you do that, you're giving Vela the chance to really get into a rhythm in a game. You have to just get after these guys. It's a one-off game. If you get after it and you lose, nobody's going to say anything. But if you sit back and try to build out of the back and you end up losing this game 2-0 and you keep doing the same thing over and over again, then we're going to question the team, right? But if these guys get after it, you know, they score a goal early and just keep putting the pedal to the metal, because these playoffs are going to go by so fast. You might as well leave everything on the field and get after it in a smart way. But I see the Sounders advancing. I think top to bottom right now, it's a better team. I think they're stronger up top, but we saw these guys click in the second half on San Jose. If they can do that and put this defense under pressure, I think they can be successful. What do you think?
Right there with you. I think the separation between these two teams this year will be defensively. Last year, it was tough to pull them apart. LFC conceded too many goals. Don't have enough to stop a playoff Nico, playoff Rui Diaz, playoff Jordan Morris, a team that's really going to be hungry and ready to go. It's a home game. I know the fans aren't there, but still you're at home. You want to prove that last year wasn't a fluke. I think if LAFC are less than what they can be up top as well, meaning Rossi and Rodriguez don't get cleared, then it's a wrap. I think Vela, yes, he's great. With BWP, yes, they've got goals there. Not as dynamic as they have when they have the two Uruguayan wingers who can just keep Nuhu and Kelvin Leyden back. They won't be able to do that. Sounders score first. It's going to be a long night for the Galaxy. For LAFC. Goalkeeper, you look over the pitch, kind of who wins out positionally. Goalkeeper is not close. The back line is not close. Midfield, you know, you can take it either way. Depends what someone's looking for. And then up top, Vela's better than everybody. But then Nico, Rui Diaz and Jordan Morris on a goalkeeper. So Seattle have more. And I think they'll trouble the LAFC back line more than Galaxy. I think Galaxy, because I played, they knocked me out every year in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly.
traumatized me. But yeah, I think Seattle wins. I think the Sounders win. I think they advance. The playoff is hard because you could face Portland in the next round.
Yep.
And that's not an easy game. And then we'll see what happens. But Tuesday night, Seattle Sounders playing LAFC here at CenturyLink Field. It'll be a nationally televised game. I'm really not sure if it's ESPN or Fox Sports, but one of those two. You'll find it, one of those two. We'll be on the radio as well. As usual, we'll be on the radio. Make sure you tune in, listen to us on the radio. 950 KJR, Sounders against LAFC. Big, big game. So as always, thanks for joining us. Thanks again to Ante Razo for having us. Enjoy this over the next few days, and then hopefully we'll have another one that's not an end of year wrap, but actually previewing a future playoff game. Now, as always, winging it with Zach and Brad. Thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it. We'll talk to you guys next week.